Chapter 98. Now that I was left wholly to myself, I gave notice of my intention to quit the chambers in the temple as soon as my tenancy could legally determine, and in the meanwhile to underlet them. At once I put bills up in the windows, for I was in debt and had scarcely any money, and began to be seriously alarmed by the state of my affairs. I ought rather to write that I should have been alarmed if I had had energy and concentration enough to help me to the clear perception of any truth beyond the fact that I was falling very ill. The late stress upon me had enabled me to put off illness, but not to put it away. I knew that it was coming on me now, and I knew very little else, and was even careless as to that. For a day or two, I lay on the sofa, or on the floor anywhere, according as I happened to sink down with a heavy head and aching limbs, and no purpose, and no power. Then there came one night which appeared of great duration, and which teemed with anxiety and horror, and when in the morning I tried to sit up in my bed, and think of it, I found I could not do so. Whether I really had been down in Garden Court in the dead of the night, groping about for the boat that I supposed to be there, whether I had two or three times come to myself on the staircase with great terror, not knowing how I had got out of bed, whether I had found myself lighting the lamp, possessed by the idea that he was coming up the stairs, and that the lights were blown out, whether I had been inexpressibly harassed by the distracted talking, laughing, and groaning of someone, and had half suspected those sounds to be of my own making, whether there had been a closed iron furnace in a dark corner of the room, and a voice had called out over and over again that Miss Havisham was consuming within it. These were things that I tried to settle with myself, and get into some order, as I lay that morning on my bed. But the vapor of a limicon would come between me and them, disordering them all, and it was through the vapor at last that I saw two men looking at me. "What do you want?" I asked, starting. "I don't know you." "Well, sir," returned one of them, bending down and touching me on the shoulder, "this is a matter that you will soon arrange, I dare say, but you're arrested." "What is the debt?"
£123.15.6.
"Jeweler's account, I think." "What is to be done?"
"You had better come to my house," said the man. "I keep a very nice house." I made some attempt to get up and dress myself. When I next attended to them, they were standing a little off from the bed, looking at me. I still lay there.
"You see my state," said one. "I would come with you if I could, but indeed I am quite unable. If you take me from here, I think I shall die by the way." "Perhaps," they replied, or argued the point, or tried to encourage me to believe that I was better than I thought. For as much as they hang in my memory by only this one slender thread, I don't know what they did, except that they forbore to remove me. That I had a fever and was avoided, that I suffered greatly, that I often lost my reason, that the time seemed interminable, that I confounded impossible existences with my own identity, that I was a brick in the house wall, and yet entreating to be released from the giddy place where the builders had set me, that I was a steel beam of a vast engine, clashing and whirling over a gulf, and yet that I implored in my own person to have the engine stopped and my part in it hammered off, that I passed through these phases of disease, I know of my own remembrance, and did in some sort know at the time, that I sometimes struggled with real people in the belief that they were murderers, and that I would all at once comprehend that they meant to do me good, and would then sink exhausted in their arms, and suffer them to lay me down, I also knew at the time. But, above all, I knew that there was a constant tendency in all these people who, when I was very ill, would present all kinds of extraordinary transformations of the human face, and would be much dilated in size above all, I say, I knew that there was an extraordinary tendency in all these people, sooner or later to settle down into the likeness of Joe. After I had turned the worst point of my illness, I began to notice that, while all its other features changed, this one consistent feature did not change.
whoever came about me, still settled down into Joe. I opened my eyes in the night, and I saw in the great chair at the bedside, Joe. I opened my eyes in the day, and, sitting on the window seat, smoking his pipe in the shaded open window, still I saw Joe. I asked for a cooling drink, and the dear hand that gave it me was Joe's. I sank back on my pillow after drinking, and the face that looked so hopefully and tenderly upon me was the face of Joe. At last, one day, I took courage, and said, "Is it Joe?" And the dear old home voice answered, "Which it air, old chap." "Oh Joe, you break my heart. Look angry at me, Joe. Strike me, Joe. Tell me of my ingratitude. Don't be so good to me." For, Joe had actually laid his head down on the pillow at my side, and put his arm round my neck, in his joy, that I knew him. "Which dear old Pip, old chap," said Joe, "you and me was ever friends. And when you're well enough, to go out for a ride with larks." After which, Joe withdrew to the window, and stood with his back towards me, wiping his eyes. And as my extreme weakness prevented me from getting up and going to him, I lay there, penitently whispering, "Oh God bless him! Oh God bless this gentle Christian man!" Joe's eyes were red when I next found him beside me, but I was holding his hand, and we both felt happy. "How long, dear Joe? Which you meant or say, Pip, how long have your illness lasted, dear old chap?" "Yes, Joe. It's the end of May, Pip. Tomorrow is the 1st of June. And have you been here all that time, dear Joe?" "Pretty nigh, old chap. For, as I says to Biddy, when the news of your being ill were brought by letter, which it were brought by the post, and being formerly single he is now married, though underpaid for a deal of walking and shoe leather, but wealth were not a object on his part, and marriage were the great wish of his heart, it is so delightful to hear you, Joe. But I interrupt you in what you said to Biddy. Which it were," said Joe, "that how you might be amongst strangers, and that how you and me having been ever friends, a wisit at such a moment might not prove unacceptable. And Biddy, her word were, go to him, without loss of time." "Apostrophe that," said Joe, summing up with his judicial air, "were the word of Biddy. Go to him, apostrophe Biddy say, without loss of time. Apostrophe in short, I shouldn't greatly deceive you," Joe added, after a little grave reflection, "if I represented to you that the word of that young woman were, without a minute's loss of time." There Joe cut himself short, and informed me that I was to be talked to in great moderation, and that I was to take a little nourishment at stated frequent times, whether I felt inclined for it or not, and that I was to submit myself to all his orders. So, I kissed his hand, and lay quiet, while he proceeded to indite a note to Biddy, with my love in it. Evidently, Biddy had taught Joe to write. As I lay in bed looking at him, it made me, in my weak state, cry again with pleasure, to see the pride with which he set about his letter. My bedstead, divested of its curtains, had been removed, with me upon it, into the sitting room, as the airiest and largest, and the carpet had been taken away, and the room kept always fresh and wholesome night and day. At my own writing table, pushed into a corner and cumbered with little bottles, Joe now sat down to his great work, first choosing a pen from the pen tray, as if it were a chest of large tools, and tucking up his sleeves, as if he were going to wield a crowbar or sledgehammer. It was necessary for Joe to hold on heavily to the table with his left elbow, and to get his right leg well out behind him, before he could begin, and when he did begin, he made every downstroke so slowly that it might have been 6 feet long, while at every upstroke I could hear his pen spluttering extensively. He had a curious idea that the inkstand was on the side of him where it was not, and constantly dipped his pen into space, and seemed quite satisfied with the result. Occasionally, he was tripped up by some orthographical stumbling block, but on the whole he got on very well indeed, and when he had signed his name, and had removed a finishing blot from the paper to the crown of his head with his two forefingers, He got up and hovered about the table, trying the effect of his performance from various points of view as it lay there, with unbounded satisfaction. Not to make Joe uneasy by talking too much, even if I had been able to talk much, I deferred asking him about Miss Havisham until next day. He shook his head, when I then asked him if she had recovered. "Is she dead, Joe?" "Why, you see, old chap," said Joe, in a tone of remonstrance, and by way of getting at it by degrees, "I wouldn't go so far as to say that, for that's a deal to say, but she ain't living, Joe." "That's nigher where it is," said Joe. "She ain't living. Did she linger long, Joe?" "Arter you was took ill, pretty much about what you might call, if he was put to it, a week," said Joe, still determined, on my account, to come at everything by degrees. "Dear Joe, have you heard what becomes of her property?" "Well, old chap," said Joe, "it do appear that she had settled the most of it, which I meant her say tied it up, on Miss Estella. But she had wrote out a little coddle shell in her own hand a day or two afore the accident, leaving a cool 4,000 to Mr. Matthew Pocket. And why, do you suppose, above all things, Pip, she left that cool 4,000 unto him? Because of Pip's account of him, the said Matthew. Apostrophe I am told by Biddy, that ere the writing," said Joe, repeating the legal term as if it did him infinite good, "account of him, the said Matthew. Apostrophe and a cool 4,000, Pip." I never discovered from whom Joe derived the conventional temperature of the 4,000 pounds, but it appeared to make the sum of money more to him, and he had a manifest relish in insisting on its being cool. This account gave me great joy, as it perfected the only good thing I had done. I asked Joe whether he had heard if any of the other relations had any legacies. "Miss Sarah," said Joe, "she have 25 pound per annum further by pills, on account of being bilious. Miss Georgina, she have 20 pound down. Mrs. What's the name of them wild beasts with humps, old chap?" "Camels?" said I, wondering why he could possibly want to know. Joe nodded. "Mrs. Camels," by which I presently understood he meant Camilla, "she have 5 pound fur to buy rushlights to put her in spirits when she wake up in the night." The accuracy of these recitals was sufficiently obvious to me to give me great confidence in Joe's information. "And now," said Joe, "you ain't that strong yet, old chap, that you can take in more nor one additional shovel full today. Old Orlicky's been a bustin' upon a dwelling house."
"Whose?"
said one. "Not, I grant you, but what his manners is given to blusterous," said Joe, apologetically. "Still, a Englishman's house is his castle, and castles must not be busted except when done in war time. And whatsomever the failings on his part, he were a corn and seedsman in his heart. Is it Pumblick Hook's house that has been broken into, then?" "That's it, Pip," said Joe, "and they took his till, and they took his cash box, and they drinked his wine, and they partook of his whittles, and they slapped his face, and they pulled his nose, and they tied him up to his bedpost, and they give him a dozen, and they stuffed his mouth full of flowering annuals, to prevent his crying out. But he knowed Orlick, and Orlick's in the county jail." By these approaches we arrived at unrestricted conversation. I was slow to gain strength, but I did slowly and surely become less weak, and Joe stayed with me, and I fancied I was little Pip again. For, the tenderness of Joe was so beautifully proportioned to my need, that I was like a child in his hands. He would sit, and talk to me in the old confidence, and with the old simplicity, and in the old unassertive protecting way, so that I would half believe that all my life since the days of the old kitchen was one of the mental troubles of the fever that was gone. He did everything for me except the household work, for which he had engaged a very decent woman, after paying off the laundress on his first arrival, which I do assure you, Pip, he would often say, in explanation of that liberty, "I found her a tapping the spare bed, like a cask of beer, and drawing off the feathers in a bucket, for sale. which he would have tapped the ore next, and drawn it off with Ile laying on it, and was then a carrying away the coals gradually in the soupcherine and vegetable dishes, and the wine and spirits in your Wellington boots. We looked forward to the day when I should go out for a ride, as we had once looked forward to the day of my apprenticeship. And when the day came, and an open carriage was got into the lane, Joe wrapped me up, took me in his arms, carried me down to it, and put me in, as if I were still the small helpless creature to whom he had so abundantly given of the wealth of his great nature. And Joe got in beside me, and we drove away together into the country, where the rich summer growth was already on the trees, and on the grass, and sweet summer scents filled all the air. The day happened to be Sunday, and when I looked on the loveliness around me, and thought how it had grown and changed, and how the little wild flowers had been forming, and the voices of the birds had been strengthening, by day and by night, under the sun, and under the stars, while poor I lay burning and tossing on my bed, the mere remembrance of having burned and tossed there, came like a check upon my peace. But, when I heard the Sunday bells, and looked around a little more upon the outspread beauty, I felt that I was not nearly thankful enough, that I was too weak yet, to be even that, and I laid my head on Joe's shoulder, as I had laid it long ago, when he had taken me to the fair where not, and it was too much for my young senses. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.